This is Liz Murray from NCSA Public Affairs, sitting down with Satoshi Matsuoka of the Tokyo Institute of Technology, who gave a keynote this morning at the 2015 Blue Water Symposium towards inevitable convergence of HPC and big data. So in your opinion, what do you believe the value of Blue Waters is?
Well, I think Blue Waters is a landmark machine for the United States, especially for the wider academic audiences. Well, certainly there are other machines in the U.S., predominantly in DOE space. But their usage are more or less towards more dedicated, mission-oriented goals. I mean, there are open science machines, and the machines like the Oak Ridge, basically the open science labs. But still, they tend to favor extremely large and compute-intensive workloads. Whereas I think Blue Waters, although it's still within the realm of NSF, is still, of course, intended for these fairly large-scale computation workloads. I think there's a lot more flexibility of being more user-friendly to cater to the larger academic audience. And, you know, running a similar center ourselves, catering to not only to these high-end users, but also to these long-tail users, are very important, because when you look at the academic funding, more or less, they have focused areas, but also they have these very basic research fundings where you let thousands of flowers bloom, is you never know where the next innovation comes from. So it's very valuable not only to support high-end, but also support these long-tail research, and then, you know, have them, if they are successful, then migrate, you know, do eventual migration to becoming more predominant high-end computation, then have a path there. So again, it's really important to for academic centers to cater to both the high-end and the also to the long tail, you know, thousands of, you know, tens of thousands of users. And I think Blue Waters fulfill both missions.
So to look on the flip of that, even within your own center, you know, also very much in particular with Blue Waters, what do you believe science, research, academia would look like if they didn't have access to these kind of machines?
Yeah, so again, that's sort of a question that we are also faced with, you know, by our funding sources, because there's, in some sense, funding is competitive. So whether you spend, you know, $100 million on a machine, or do you spend $100 million on something else? That's always, there's always a question of justification. Well, one thing you can think of is, what if we didn't have a big machine like this? Then you end up having people buy all these small fragmented resources. And when you sum up the cost, actually material cost is even higher if you have these fragmentation, because you can never get those lucrative deals that large resources can get. You can never get proper management of these machines, because, you know, just as the cloud vendors nowadays, why are people moving to the cloud? Well, because there is more better management. People don't have to hire their own system engineers to manage the machines. Rather, they can have, you know, the cloud vendors do most of the servicing, so they don't have to worry about something on-premise. It's the very same thing with supercomputers. In fact, supercomputers have been doing this for a lot longer time than clouds. When somebody asks the question, is it worth the money? Then the answer is, well, no. If people are going to need these computational resources anyhow, why would you have them fragmented? The general public believes that the cloud is more or less the inevitable concentration resources in order to lower the cost. I mean, supercomputers have been doing it for a long time. Why don't you believe in that story? So that's one thing. Well, of course, that has the implication that we always have to be somewhat cost conscious to make sure that we don't overspend, not only machines, but also in servicing. But we also have to be price competitive. But still, that sort of concentration of resources basically fundamentally saves money.
So your idea is that science is not going to stop needing computing, you know, so they're going to seek it out no matter what. Why not give them something that's kind of all-inclusive?
Yeah, and of course, and secondly, so then you ask the question, so why aren't people, you know, just doing science now in modern times, doing science in the cloud, as opposed to doing them on a supercomputer. Well, so there again, there are several reasons for this. One is the cloud centers are never, at present, are not equipped to handle some of the more demanding workloads, as much as they like to claim so. Well, in all honesty, the cloud resources are fairly, individual resources, fairly low end. They have, you know, very poor networking. They may have standard processors, but they have a very small number of high-end accelerators like GPUs. They may not have extremely fast I/O, but this is done for a good reason because dominant cloud workloads are like that. They don't demand these high-end, but many of the scientific computing workloads do. So that's one answer. And the other is, well, supercomputing is not just about providing the hardware resources. It's about the software. It's about the consulting. It's about the libraries and applications and everything. It's even about some of the ISV applications, the open source applications, how we maintain well. There's a huge layer above the hardware from, and not even just the software, it's the whole ecosystem, including, you know, the services you get, the consulting you get, the people who are formulate a community around this, so you can actually seek help from these communities. So the cloud vendors lack most of everything except for the low-level hardware. And they know this. So that's why the cloud vendors are very eager to actually work with centers like us. Now, in order to try to leverage some of the expertise we have into their resources, into their operations, eventually, maybe the supercomputers may actually get absorbed into cloud. But that will take a long time because there has to be business justification for that. So right now, if we didn't have these, people will not be able to get all the right consultancy or the software. So they won't be able to get the science done because, you know, they have to do everything by themselves, which is very, very labor intense and time consuming. And scientists just want to have a very nice environment when it comes. They want to be able to use machines. They want to have everything set up. They want to have all the libraries and the latest versions. You know, they want to see how the machine's performing. They want to debug. They want to monitor the performance. All, you know, they want to do all these things in a very easy way. Now, you don't get that unless you have these big centers.
Yeah, the human expertise can sometimes be just as important as the actual hardware itself.
Exactly.
Absolutely. It makes your usage more efficient. So your conversation about the cloud kind of lends itself well to my next question, because I feel like so many people just assume that the cloud is the future.
Mm-hmm.
But what do you believe the future of this idea of big compute is or should be, or where should we be looking?
Well, eventually, I believe that there should be some sort of consolidation in that whether we will maintain the machines on premise, or we will work with the cloud vendors to facilitate these high-end resources onto their premise, is something in the long run, the latter actually may happen. However, again, that's for the mutual benefit of both the vendor and also the people who are catering these high-end services to the larger science community. It's a toss-up. It's not too clear whether this model will work or not. What will happen, however, is that because of the advances in networking and optics, from the optics to all the layers in the control of the network, that we will be able to connect the cloud resources and the supercomputing resources at very high speeds. In fact, this is already happening in Japan, where we have a consortium of cloud vendors hooked up to our national academic network, to which, of course, the supercomputers are hooked up to. In 2016, we will have a ubiquitous L2 VPN 100 gigabit peer-to-peer connection to the cloud resources, cloud centers, at least those that are in Japan, to our centers. And this will be elevated to 400 gigabits and terabit in the future. Even if the supercomputers will and the cloud resources might be separate, I believe there will be, because, you know, one, you know, in some cases, you know, when you have very small workloads, you want agile, very flexible allocation, very personalized, you may want to use, you know, clouds which are more, much more tailored for that purpose. You may still want to connect all these resources to be hooked up. And the technologies are there, will be there. And the eventual goal is to how to create an environment where, you know, all of this becomes more or less transparent. Whereas we're from the very low end, We have, again, we have all these basic research, tens of hundreds of thousands of users. And then from there, people will slowly elevate themselves to using higher-end resources. There will be some smooth transition path. In order to implement that model, they have smooth path in terms of the infrastructural usage model. And for us to work on the very low-level things like low-level networking all the way to the service models would be very important. So in some sense, there'll be a merger. Whether it'll be a physical hardware merger, that's not clear, but there will be more of a merger of the usage environment.
So you've definitely already started to answer my last question here, which is for this future, let's say merger to happen, what's the most important step? So in your experience at your center, what did that take to start coming together?
Well, this is still very nascent. It's just starting to happen. What we're doing right now is to, of course, to discuss extensively with some of the cloud vendors to see what the strengths are, what are the weaknesses are, what are the differences in the model, how can we unify some of the basic software service models, for example, security, how do we have uniform authentication procedure, how can we, for example, do automated high-level control of this network connection. Of course, the low-level mechanisms are already there, modern MPLS for optics, the technology's there, but then you have to have a high level service models and capabilities. So we're working at various fronts to try to see how these resources are better federated. That there will be a single sign-on, there will be a unified security model, it'll be very data management, of course, is a big problem, and being able to access the data ubiquitously, whether it be on supercomputers or on the cloud, that's very important. Again, even for data, how do you split the roles? Where do you put your hot data versus where you put your more cold glacial data? Whether it fits in a tape library on your center or does it fit in some cloud storage? They're also managing a new sort of glacial storage for themselves because now they're being bombarded with tons of data, so they have to facilitate those. So do you leverage those or do you have your own? That's another thing you gotta work out. How do you schedule the computation? How do you work on well, it's not just a batch scheduler. It's more of a holistic view when you have a scientific workflow. How do you have the users have the appropriate selection of the resources? Do you automate it? Or do you make it more tighter user involvement in these resource selection? How do you do the charging model? How do you do the licensing model of software?
So who takes these next steps, though? I mean, was it a mutual step in that direction? I'm just so in relation to, say, NCSA and Blue Waters, and what's the big question of what's next? Who takes those steps?
Well, I think the centers will obviously have to take the initiatives along with the user community and also other stakeholders. So certainly without cohesive involvement of the major stakeholders, their efforts are going to get fragmented. So NCSA, in the U.S., there's NCSA, there's XCEED. Obviously, these organizations should take the leading role. And of course, there are major vendors like, for example, Amazon or Microsoft, so Google, so forth, and other cloud vendors. And they should also get involved, and they would like to get involved. NSF, the network providers, Internet too, and of course some of the major user communities at large. Well, how to design these next generation infrastructure is a big task, and a similar thing is happening with us. We have a very similar structure with the centers and the internet network and so forth. So we're seeking both bottom up and top down approaches. Bottom up, several labs, centers, various stakeholders are gathering to. Now, really starting to gather to come up with more uniform operational model. As I said, several separate, however friendly, collaborations going on. And of course, we always would like some top-level policy decisions and funding there too. There should be some more directed leadership to try to establish those common models because it'll benefit everyone. So taking both approaches and stakeholders being involved in both, and to realize that this kind of convergence is inevitable and for everyone's benefit, I think is very important. And this, of course, this will extend to more international relations. Compared to the grid days, I think we have more promise because the cloud, well, for one thing, the software stack is becoming much more uniform. And also there's a commercial cloud vendors which are also trying to unify their software stack. So this the fundamental software stack, I think will be there's more commonality, and also there's a mandate to be sort of viable commercial space as well. So the intention to unify these efforts, and also the other element is, of course, HPC has now become much more relevant in the industrial space as well. So I think compared to like 10 years ago when the grid, we tried to formulate the grid and we kind of partially succeeded, some of the remnants we still have, but the clouds sprung up and they have a they went to a very centralized model, and that became more of a commercial success. But now I think it's time to try to bring back these concepts, and but with a much more modern software stack to try to come to unity. And again, this I think is inevitable, but we have to have a very proactive efforts by the stakeholders.
Well, thank you very much. That's all I had for you today, and I appreciate you taking your time to share your
Okay.
insights.
Thank you.